Love is the doctrine of UU faith. Not schmaltzy rom-com love, I think, but agape, the Greek word for a more indiscriminate love, encompassing tolerance, respect, charity, and all that other liberal woke stuff that's fallen out of favor out there. It's no secret how that disfavor has snowballed lately with bigotry, misogyny, greed, chauvinism, small-mindedness, and the like flying unchecked out of some modern-day Pandora's box. I wonder if a lot of what unites us as UUs isn't our shared distress about the widespread antipathy towards agape that's emerged in such a disastrous way in our country and beyond. Love is the doctrine of our opposition to all that, the kind of love that inspires commitment to diversity, equity, inclusion, justice, and peace. That kind of love propels social activism. But it may be less efficacious when resolving interpersonal conflicts. How do you find the way to say I love you, to say it sincerely, to someone close to you with whom your relationship has been more contentious than affectionate? That may call for a somewhat different course from the one our social conscience takes us on. It may entail more humility and deeper introspection. I recently became aware of the Hawaiian reconciliation process of Ho'oponopono, watching an emotionally wrought scene on the striking medical TV show, The Pit. I was so moved by it that you'll be very disappointed to learn I abandoned my plan to riff on stewardship today in favor of reflecting a bit on how Ho'oponopono can help resolve painful conflicts. It works by inviting you to own four simple statements. I love you. Thank you. I forgive you. Please forgive me. I think that scene in The Pit grabbed me so powerfully because of how strongly I identified with it. My parents and I had a distant enough relationship to fuel decades of therapy. In my home, hearing any expression of love was almost unheard of. I remember once when I was 16 or 17, my mother voiced some kind of opinion, I think it was political, and my adolescent know-it-all response dripped with contempt and ridicule. I remember that because a week or two after that icy encounter, I found myself echoing her exact viewpoint in a conversation with friends. I may not have recognized it as love, but despite my hostility, it turned out hearing my mother mattered to me, to my sense of self. She was planted inside my mind, and even without outward affection, that's a kind of love, isn't it? And isn't it love when we decline to be defined by estrangement or distress, when we choose to keep our resentments in the back seat and embrace a little understanding and empathy where we previously hadn't? Maybe there are people in your life that you find almost impossible to love. But maybe you do anyway, in spite of yourself. I think gratitude is often a trail marker on the path to uncovering buried love. The great psychoanalyst Melanie Klein defined envy as the primal emotion underlying the roots of anger, aggression, and hatred. The title of her seminal book, Envy and Gratitude, hints at ways of working through those barriers to loving relationships. Simply stated, gratitude comes with maturity, a counterweight to envy, a salve for narcissistic injury, the sometimes devastatingly enraged feeling accompanying not getting our way, of experiencing in our guts how the universe just isn't behaving as we want it to. Death and dying are often at the forefront of life at its most injurious, but there are foreshadowings of death in any number of conflicts and losses we face. Still, even when feeling injured can spark our outrage, if we can give ourselves pause, that slight has within it an invitation to look for what we have to be grateful for. One of the things I learned in AA meetings is that, like many addicts, I'm susceptible to the poor me syndrome. I'm amazed at the number of people and things I can find to complain about. It's embarrassing to recognize how petty I can be. But it can be a redemptive vision if it points to a next step, stopping and considering what I have to be grateful for. I may complain about any number of things, but it helps to remember that on balance, I like my life. I'm glad to be alive. And like you, like most people, that's something I can't have, can't enjoy all on my own. So whoever you are out there, even if we have our differences keeping us at odds, thank you. Thank you for the ways even those differences have helped shape the life I love. And thank you for all we have in common, all we've shared, despite our differences. I'll never forget a young, take-no-prisoners woman I worked with who, in the course of a 4-year struggle with a fatal disease, dredged up repressed memories of horrific childhood abuse by a venerated family member. When her family refused to discuss or even believe her heartbreak, she reluctantly cut herself off from them, a difficult but courageous step that reinforced her resolve to fight for herself and every second of the life she loved. She was a warrior, one of the most admirable figures I ever met. And part of her fight became her insistence on a truth her family refused to face. But when she emerged from an excruciating bout of her chemo treatment, she was undone by a feeling she'd resisted until then with the fervor of a crusader. She wanted her mommy. It's never too late to uncover the love holding us. Like her, I suspect we all have more to be thankful for, more to love, than our unresolved resentments allow for. Following that realization might lead us to other unexpected places where we never intended to go, but end up glad that we did. places where we find ourselves opening doors we'd long determined to keep shut. Places of forgiveness. Ho'oponopono quite rightly draws a distinction between I forgive you and please forgive me. Since each of those statements offered sincerely is important, even life-changing in its own right. Nevertheless, it's worth noting that they often go together like opposite sides of the same coin. I think of three particular people, each of whom played huge roles in my life, and each of whom I'd almost made a career of resenting. Even their being dead hasn't entirely erased my maintaining a host of justifications for those resentments. But that doesn't mean it's ever too late to attend to unfinished business. There's still room for some repair work on those relationships, since they have a permanent foothold in my mind, and still a big reward for an internal process of both forgiving them, appreciating that they were doing the best they could, and asking their forgiveness by trying to understand their complex lives better than I had, and acknowledging how I was no prize either. In many, if not all cases, neither bestowing nor asking for forgiveness is easy, but avoiding both can lead to a life far emptier and more distressed than it need be. This forgiveness business can be complicated. More than once, in exploring various offenses and abuses with therapy patients, I've seen a dawning realization emerge that to move beyond any disabling hurt they carried, they needed to forgive their tormentors. And in order to do that, as counterintuitive as this appears, they needed to find a way to forgive themselves for having endured the torment. To do that isn't easy, or by most measures, even logical. It takes a long time and some deep digging to get to that point. I'm not suggesting some kind of masochistic self-blame, but rather taking responsibility for yourself, even when by any objective evaluation, you were powerless in the face of what assailed you. Allowing yourself to get there can help heal both your inner pain and your cracked or broken relationships. As is the case with many of you, I'm at the stage in life where wondering about how I got to where I am and what it's all meant have grown increasingly meaningful both in my outlook and in my looks within. Humility and empathy loom large in the repair work still hovering before me, and I'm guessing I'm not alone in that. As empowering and rewarding as humility and empathy are, they tend to demand repeated rediscovery more than enduring as a one-time quick fix. Our habitual ways of being and relating are tenacious. Reconciliation and atonement, which could be understood as at-one-ment, are rarely for the faint of heart, but few things in life offer more reward. I think we live in an age that increasingly seems to disdain the very things, the values, and the healing power that Ho'oponopono is all about: love and gratitude, self-reflection, responsibility, and forgiveness. In the face of the greed, hatred, and cynicism that's encroaching on us all, I increasingly feel the need for your help in embracing the values you espouses. That's a big part of why I come here. I try to take the time each day to remind myself of how very thankful I am that we have each other to help maintain our adherence to the beauty and grace that life at its fullest affords us. And beyond that, I'm enormously encouraged that we aren't hiding behind those values, holding them only within, but have courageously charted and empowered a course to take them both to a world out there badly in need of them, as well as to the more inwardly directed world of sorrow and possibility we waken to every day. So remember, I love you. Thank you. I forgive you. Please forgive me. May it be so.